Well, Ed Dame's other website, thekillshot.com, he's providing you a DVD, thekillshot.com, and we'll be back with him and more on Coast to Coast AM. And let me talk to you about the asteroids, first of all. Do you see anything coming close by? I mean, they're constantly zooming around, but any potential strikes here do you see?
No. There appears to be one way out in the future. We've, of course, looked at this years ago, and there appears to be a big one that's way out there, but it's so far out we can't tell how hundreds of years or possibly something like that. So, no.
No problems there on the horizon, as we say.
But this one.
What's going on with these rapid climate changes we're having?
Well, I think that some of these apostate climatologists that are out there saying that we're approaching a mini ice age are right. You're going to see in the next 10 years nominally a very, very rapid climate changes. And unfortunately, as most of your listeners are aware, that means that we cannot grow crops the traditional way. Seasons will be all screwy. And in the end, the consequences are pretty disastrous. It's famine, flat-out famine worldwide. The rich, wealthy countries are lucky. We're lucky. We're so fortunate. But places now where famine already exists, those people will be wiped out.
So do you see a consolidation of the world's population? I mean, from the 6.7 billion we've got now, are we going to go down or are we going to continue going up?
I think we'll lose about a third of this, the population of the Earth in a biblical proportion type of thing in the next 10 to 20 years is my guess.
2 to 2.5 billion people gone?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. From these things?
Yes.
Crop failures,
food shortages. No water, no food, and Mad Max type of things.
It would be Mad Max.
Oh, the Mad Max is coming to a street near you. That's why, you know, and our nation knows it as well. You can see shades of Mad Max already in England last year and this year, and you'll be seeing that in a town near you soon. It's in certain cities. It's a fait accompli. If it were L.A. or Oakland, if the lights go out and electricity is off for a matter of hours, you've got a Mad Max scenario. So you can imagine. If the lights are off for 2 months, what's going to happen?
Well, that's true, too. And if the power goes during extreme heat, extreme cold, you're going to have a lot of people die.
You will. And the other thing is about being in the right place, if you can identify that, it's important because you won't be able to pump gas either if there's no electricity. So you won't be able to get out, escape from L.A.
In spite of all this, are you glad you're around right now?
Oh, I'm always glad I'm around. I know it won't be for that much longer, but I sure appreciate my life. And I am happy with me and my life. I'm just very sad about watching evil, just flat out evil out there. That's all.
It's everywhere, Ed.
It is. I try to ameliorate that. To some degree, a small degree, with my missing children searches and those kinds of things, just for my own soul.
Do you see anything enlightening out there? Anything uplifting?
I think contact is nice. When all this stuff hits the fan and starts to pass, I believe that we will have contact. Because there's a lot of folks out there, I use that term loosely, and you know what? There's lots of contact out there, and we right now don't have it, and I think that's a very fascinating thing. I want to point out one thing, though, that a lot of the entities that we've observed as remote viewers over the years are not physical like us necessarily. They can breach this particular dimension, I'll use dimension loosely, but they reside somewhere else. Only a nominal percent of the gravity and what we see in the universe is accounted for in terms of light emitting or light reflecting material, matter. So all that dark matter, all that dark energy out there, it's coming from other dimensions, and people exist things exist in those other dimensions that have learned how not only to time travel, whatever that means, down here, because we misperceive the time as an illusion, as we perceive it, time travel, but they can transit dimensions too. And that's a pretty neat thing to be able to do. They don't do it themselves. They do it with machines and devices. That we know. Many of the things that we see in the sky and call UFOs or crafts, these words are forbidden in remote viewing. We're not allowed to use any words like that because words, language, and culture traps you. We call, in experimental psychology, that's termed the restricting effects of awareness, and it can be a box. But those things out there, they're not vehicles or crafts. You know, they can actually be openings, and they can actually be tools that are created from a distance. That's how crop circles are created. A tool is created, a transitory tool is created, lays out a crop circle in ephemeral media, and then the tool dissipates. All the carbon atoms that made it up, the nitrogen atoms or whatever was required to make that machine, it's no longer needed. It's like a throwaway razor or a pen.
Do you see anything with the breakthroughs in technology?
My son is working in the Lawrence Livermore Fusion Project soon.
Oh, he is?
Yes, he is a very brilliant young scientist, and they've asked him to come aboard there. So if that works, if that fusion project works, then our energy walls are open. But...
Yeah, but do they really want that to happen?
Yes, too. But the military technology, a lot of it's classified. If that needs to come in, if that transited to the civilian world faster, that would help all of us out a lot.
Well, it sure would. And martial law, let's talk about that for a moment. You see that coming?
Yes, sir.
You see government afraid of its citizens?
Yes.
Are we talking about planetary-wide or just here?
Here primarily. Yeah, of course you see it in other countries. Right now the ones that are undergoing, the Mideast Spring. That's a given. But you're going to see it here. The government is afraid of the citizens, and things are not looking very nice in the streets of New York City, and they're not looking very nice in other places anymore. So, yeah.
Will Canada be affected by any of this?
I don't know. Canada is a horse of a different color. Canada was settled by people who operated it in groups. The Europeans and others who settled Canada, they're used to working together. They're more social. America was settled by independent pioneers. Every man took care of his own family, did his own hunting, his own farming, his own shoeing, all that. And it's very, very different cultural background. So I don't think Canada will go so be swept up in this kind of a malaise and Mad Max like we will undergo.
Okay, so it's primarily restricted to the U.S.
Mm, yes, that's what I'm saying.
All right, let's talk about the election, 2012.
You know, if we were to remote view the next election, which we can do, in fact, I'm almost been afraid to do it, we can do that, and we can actually, if in time, events have a lag time. If an event exists in time, then we can remote view it immediately. But if it's fuzzy, like an over-the-horizon radar, the target is not within real range yet, and it's still fuzzy, it's still over the horizon, then remote viewers cannot depict and download the information associated with that target the next election. We may not be able to, and we have experience in this, to be able to discern who will win that election, maybe not up until 6 months prior to the election itself, but we could try. However, I already expressed my fear to you is that martial law will be declared prior to the next election, and maybe the new boys that the corporations and bankers, that the American people want as president, maybe that won't happen because martial law will be declared and there will be no election. I think that geophysical as well as economic events are going to lead to martial law before that election. I just feel it in my gut.
When you are with the Matrix Intelligence Agency, what does your group do? How do you assign things?
I have viewers that I have groomed and professionally trained viewers, and I have both my own private projects and clients, mostly big clients. And
who ask you specifically to do something?
Yes. Yeah. And then these viewers are tasked with a number. They only get a number. Anybody that's a remote viewer out there knows what I mean, or if you learn remote viewing, you'll see you only get a set of 2 four-digit numbers, which is the target. And that could be the location, the most significant current nuclear terrorist threat, which could be a real problem.
Sure.
A real problem set. And so that number is attached to that. And remote viewers will remote view this and send me back sketches and a summary data and possibly detailed drawings of what they have. And then I will act as the analyst and say, okay, this is what we're dealing with, and then get back to my client or use the information myself in a special study. We do a lot of work on extraterrestrial UFO stuff because it's one of the reasons I got out of the Army. I wanted to use remote viewing to study it, so got out to do that.
Do you do that because of your own interests, or are companies asking you to investigate that?
No, I do it because of my own interests. In the past, when we've had high-level sponsors, and I've been out in the field inducing close encounters of the second kind, those kind of, there's a long history of that. Those were big rollers in the world, not necessarily U.S. citizens, but royalty, let's say. And they had a lot of money, and they allowed me to pick the best, finest scientists I could pick to go out in the field with them. But the problem is, and I've discussed this on Coast to Coast before in the past, is I can't talk about the results because they're proprietary. They're owned by the client. So what I said, I don't want to do that anymore. I want to conduct and fund these forays and this research myself so that I can talk about it in venues like yours.
Have you ever remote viewed, for example, the face on Mars just to see if it's authentic or not?
Yes, sir, I have.
What do you see there?
In Cydonia Crater, Richard Hoagland, bless his heart, put me on to that years ago. When I saw that book, I got interested in, because I was the operation.
The monuments, yeah.
The training, the monuments of Mars. And it doesn't appear to be artificial. Doesn't appear to be, I won't say man-made, but there is, in that photo, there's a crater to the what would be the southeast, and on that crater, there's a kind of a break in the crater, and perched at that break is a three-sided, very tall pyramid.
Yes.
That Ingo Swann, myself, and all viewers have looked at, and that thing was built by humanoids a long time ago, who are been gone a long time.
So not the face, but the pyramids.
We're not sure about the face, and not sure about the pyramids either, except for that one skinny three-sided pyramid on the lip of that crater. That's the only one we looked at.
Can you remote view the past?
Easily.
In when you do, can you see civilizations, for example, on Mars? Can you see oceans of water?
I've never focused on the geography that much, George, but the people, yes. Uh-huh. And they were humanoids. They're tall because Mars has one-third the gravity of Earth.
That's right.
So, you know.
What happened to them?
A large passing space body came very close to the planet and disrupted it created a very large wave, a tidal wave in the atmosphere of Mars. And over a period of time, possibly 10 years, Mars lost its atmosphere. And the people knew they were dying, so they built hibernation chambers and places to try to wait out the storm. And when about 15% of the population was left, and there were about three races on Mars at the time, about 15% were left, a bunch of silvery type of vehicles, let's call them. I hate that word, but the objects came in, turned all the people's consciousness off, and took, I don't know how to say this, their vital essence, put it into jars, and
what?
Took them away.
They're reproductive sources?
No, they're not their souls, but I don't know. I don't understand the technology. All we could see is they were sucked up, and part of that became an experiment with the Mayan people. Mayan people actually were experimented with trying to reinstall some of this Martian essence or DNA or whatever it was into the Mayan people. You can see I'm struggling with this stuff. We're dealing with vast spans of time and space. Technology is, what's a technology? Is that term even useful anymore when we're looking at a race that maybe, or races that may be nominally 100 million years ahead of us? So it's a struggle. It's a struggle. We're, as remote viewers, we're observers, that we can only use the thesaurus and the lexicon of our experiences and what's in our memory to describe things. And all this stuff outruns that. You can imagine how hard it is for us to try to remote view transcendental things or even esoteric things like ghosts, transcendental things like reincarnation. Anyway, who wants to know it?
Yeah,
I'd shoot myself.
I mean, do you want to know the day you die?
Not necessarily.
Either do I. But what if, Ed, that moment was a car accident or some tragedy? Wouldn't you want to know that so you could avoid it?
Well, you may be setting up a paradox, but yes, for an individual, you can avoid these accidents. In fact, we don't have it as remote viewers. We don't have any monopoly on unconscious awareness. Unconscious is our best friend, and its key job is to keep us alive. Most people don't listen to it, but that's its job to say, "Don't get on that plane tomorrow," or "Pick up this phone call now," or something like that. But if an event en masse, a large event, is there, that's inescapable. However, as an individual, if you do know something, you can choose whether or not to avoid it or to participate in it. It is your choice if you know that. On the other hand, I'm not sure if we're looking at a paradox or not. But in our work, we're very interested in this juncture in time and this era. At what I call sanctuaries. All remote viewers know about this, sanctuaries. And that's a place to go that your personality, your unconscious says, go here. There are a number of enclaves in the world that are survivable against this kill shot. Not only survivable, where some type of quality of life can be maintained throughout the storm.
Have you seen some people, students specifically, that are just so good at this, you shake your head?
It's bound to happen to any teacher. And, of course, over the years I've seen that too. But there's another thing at play here, and that's a la Rubric Sheldrake's morphogenetic field hypothesis. Actually, it's a good theory, not just a hypothesis. The 100th monkey effect is at work here too,
right,
where
right.
This pattern that has been installed in the collective mind about how to remote view, new students can avail themselves of that, something that didn't exist, that had to actually be created over the years and evolve. So that's at work, in not just your prodigies who pop up. And but we don't like prima donnas in our business, because prima donnas can fall on their face. They can fall down. So we really are careful about grooming someone to be a prima donna.
Ed, when we come back, I basically want you to give us a little history lesson in remote viewing and how it works. We'll be back in a moment with the major, Dr. Doom, Ed Dames, on Coast to Coast AM. Well, of course, you're going to stay a little bit longer. We're going to take your phone calls next hour with Major Ed Dames, Dr. Doom, on remote viewing. And when we come right back, let's take a course on remote viewing on Coast to Coast AM. Ed, every time you're on with me, we always jump right into predictions, past, present, future, and I really have never had an opportunity just to talk with you about remote viewing. So let's do that in the half hour we've got here before we go to calls next hour. In your opinion, what is your definition of remote viewing? I mean, I've heard Paul Smith and David Morehouse and people like that. What about you?
It's systematic ESP, systematic extrasensory perception. We take the innate skill that many of your listeners and probably you also would agree that we're born with. In fact, I taught many children.
Yeah.
Because you don't have to ask that child to open their mind that hasn't closed yet, like us staid, stoic, august folks, old fogies. speaking for myself, at least.
You got that right.
And by the way, while on the subject, I'm glad that I had my last remote viewing workshop on disasters was in Reno a weekend and a half, two weeks ago. And I'm glad you didn't show up for that because the hotel, which we'll never use again, we're switching to the best hotel in Reno for my next remote viewing workshop for beginners. That's on January 14th and 15th next year.
And where's that going to be? In Reno?
Yeah, that's going to be in Reno. The really nice stuff.
And that one, I will be in L.A., so that one's possible.
Well, I hope so. I'm glad you didn't come to this last one because that we did not know, but Reno had their big first-time motorcycle convention. and my students and I arrived, lots of students, they arrived on a Friday night, and that night they were down in the restaurant at the hotel, and the Vargas, members of the Vargas motorcycle gang came in and shot up that three of the Hell's Angels. I think the head of the
shot
camp,
them?
Shot them dead. They got one or two of them dead, yeah. And so it was duck and cover and a very exciting workshop, the beginning. So I'm glad you didn't come to that one.
You should have remote viewed the hotel room before you booked it.
Really?
All right, but so when you say it's systematic ESP, what does that mean?
It means what we did in the military. And see, my job was to take Ingo Swann's discovery as the operations and training officer and massage it into a useful intelligence collection tool. But this was done over years of time before Ingo made his breakthroughs. What essentially this started out as is elements in the U.S. government who could not answer the mail, like me, using satellites and spies and all kinds of technology. We still couldn't penetrate these Russian missile programs, biological warfare programs, and other things that I can't talk about. We couldn't do it, so we knew that psychics might have an edge. So what we did was we studied the best natural psychics in the West. We studied how, when they were on target, which is important, because psychics, when they're on target, they're really on. And we'll talk about what that means. And when they're off, they're really off. That's why I can't use psychics in my work, because they're not consistent. A remote viewer is consistent.
Right.
But we studied the way the best natural psychics, like my mentor, Ingo Swann, we studied how their mind works when they were on target and what it was doing. We interrogated them. Taped them down in the beds and put electric. No, I'm just kidding. We studied them, and they studied themselves. And luckily, Ingo was somebody who did study himself. He asked of himself, "How am I doing this? What am I doing when I do it?" So he was pivotal in the development of coordinate remote viewing, the original there. So we studied that, and we turned that process into a systematic protocol. And then for political reasons that I don't want to get into right now, I have on other shows, but Ingo said, give me, who's paying for this project right now? The CIA had already paid for it, Navy to a certain degree, and now the Army was paying for it. So Ingo said, send me some Army guys. So some Army guys, me included, and some Army, and one woman, six of us, He thought that these protocols were so good that anybody could learn them now. And you didn't have to be psychic. Long story short was, as a prototype team, we became eventually better than the best natural psychics by using Ingo's discovery.
He was a genius. He is.
He's a genius in many ways. There's a Nobel Prize out there for something like this. He should have gotten it many years ago. He's an absolute genius.
Ed, were we chasing the Soviet Union, though, in this field?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was the 10-foot-tall syndrome. I don't know if you've ever heard that before, but in the old days, Cold War days, there was something called the 10-foot-tall syndrome, where the Russians were always 10 feet tall, and we've got to do something. So in this case, the Russians, and this is all history, you can find it in the archives there, anywhere. The Russians were experimenting, and the Czechs, their lackeys at the time, were their subordinates were were researching psychotronics and ESP and remote viewing and altered states. So we had to do it too. The DOD had to pump money into it. So we did. We did.
How does it work? What are we tapping into when you remote view?
There's a model that we have in business, and this is what I teach in all of my DVDs that I sell. The DVDs is a very comprehensive course that teaches this. The model, because you have to have a model in order to teach it, is that there is only one mind. Only one mind. Think of it as, we call it the matrix. We used that term long before Carrie Ann Moss and those guys, and you know that she was, that I had to coach those folks for Suspect Zero. So before Hollywood used the term, it was our term too. It was Ingo's term. Universal mind, global mind, collective unconscious. If it's the collective unconscious, it's more than simply human. We can get into that later. But there's one mind, mind of God, if you will. That's the way I think of it, but that's just my personal opinion. Our brains are oscillators. We are conscious. As long as we're alive, we're very conscious, and the brain is an oscillator. It's immersed in a single mind. That's why, as remote viewers or using any psychic faculty, I can know anything about you, and you're capable of knowing anything about me, and you cannot stop me.
You can't hide it.
You can't, and it's not telepathy. If it were telepathy, that's a two-way communication. But if I want to remote view George Noory, let's say George Noory's last vacation or next vacation, then I'm turning my unconscious.
All right, I did it, Ed. I did it. Don't remote view.
Well, I turn my unconscious attention to not you physically, but to the way you exist as a pattern of information in this matrix. That's where I'm turning my attention. That part of the process we call queuing, developing a matrix search term, and it's very similar to conducting an internet database search where you type in the word that you're interested in. And in our work, these words are interpreted by the matrix literally. Your intent means nothing. If your intent to search the internet is different than the words that you type in, your intent doesn't mean anything. You still get something in response. It's connected and associated with whatever you typed in, regardless of your intent. So that's the first part of remote viewing. The second part is the skill itself. The skill itself has a series of protocols. It's just like sheet music, playing the piano. There are four to six different stages that we go through, and each stage is like a construction project, where stage one would be tantamount to digging the hole. Stage two, pouring the foundation for a structure, a building. Stage three, putting up the infrastructure. Stage four, all the detail work. It's got to be done in that fashion, and it must be done right. And by the way, there's no thinking allowed. We have to teach the student not to think.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like playing the piano.
Once you think, you screw the whole thing up.
Yeah, everything goes downhill. Gee, what is this? And of course, that can be frustrating for a new viewer. But think about playing music or playing piano. You can't think about the note that you just played. You have to move on to the next one quickly, or the whole piece disassembles, and you have no musical piece. So in a similar fashion, we roll right along through these stages, and everybody works the same way, and it doesn't matter what the target is. It could be your missing wallet or a stolen nuclear weapon. It's the same protocols for different targets, of course, but we work the same way each time. And the last day, when we're done, our eyes are open. We're very attentive. This is an information collection skill. And please remember, all your listeners, this is a skill. It's taught. We're teaching you this skill. And when we're done, we have on white sheets of paper, and we have a pen and bond paper, and that's all we use in this process. We have diagrams and sketches and a lot of descriptive terms. And then we put our pen down because we're still in kind of a right brain mode. When you're remote viewing, it's a very tachistoscopic thing. You go right brain, so to speak, to grab a pattern of information connected with your target. And only blind targets, your unconscious is the one that knows the target because you can't hide anything from it. Then you go into a left brain sense to say, okay, what is this in my memory? If I've never experienced the color red before, then I have no idea about red. I can say, well, it's like pink. So that pink goes down on the paper. All these descriptive words about whether it's a hidden missile silo or somebody's missing cat goes down on the paper, and now you have in diagrammatic form and some drawings an answer to a question. And we analyze that. And when we analyze it, we put the thinking caps back on, and we start using intelligent guesses. Okay, what is the answer to this question based? Does our data support it? We use a Bayesian analysis and posterior probabilities. We can use all kinds of analytical tools, but sometimes it's very easy the whodunit stuff or the where is it stuff is easy to analyze. However, when you get into more exotic things, for instance, on my DVDs number 3 and 4, it's very, very complex, not very, but complex targets where the viewer is taught how to set up a problem set, whether to diagnose their mother's illness or undiagnosed illness or something like that, rather than just finding something.
Are there some viewers better, let's say, of remote viewing the past, others are better about the future, others are better about the present, or does that matter?
No, sir. No, it doesn't matter whatsoever. A target's a target.
What about meditating?
No. We studied Tibetan, master Tibetan yogis and monks. And when they meditate, they're in pure alpha. Your electrical brain state is they're in pure alpha. And remote viewing, the way we do it, it pulls you into very high theta, extremely high theta state, where there's very little energy in the side lobes, delta and alpha. It would be tantamount. That state, for instance, is equivalent to when you drive your car down the highway and you don't remember the last 10 miles that you drove.
Right.
Okay, that's a theta state.
Or 20 miles in my case.
Right, that's a theta state.
If some people are very gifted, if they're good, they're intuitive, they're psychic, does that make them better remote viewers?
It can. As a teacher, I can take somebody like that and make them not only into a professional, but an all-star. But they got to toe the line, and many of them do. However, I want to point out one difference in their performance, and I've said this before on your show. A natural psychic like the ones people that you're talking about with long, born naturally gifted, I'm a little bit below average on a scale. I had to, by dint of my labor.
Really?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I had to develop that skill working by work. But people are naturally gifted. They, in a given period of time, once they're trained in remote viewing, they produce nominally about twice as much detail as someone like myself vis-a-vis a problem. I can still solve the problem in the same amount of time, let's say an hour or 2 hours if it's a simple problem. But they will produce a great deal of detail, more colors, more descriptors of things than I will in that given period of time. Other than that, there's no difference. However, I want to point out one thing. People that are very, very psychic, many times they become schizophrenic because they're empaths. Those people will walk down the street and pick up on everybody else's emotions. And we have to be able to, in our work, be able to sort out our emotions effectively from the target's emotions if the target has any. So remote viewing is great for people like that who are empaths and being driven nuts because it's easy. It's not difficult to teach them in a day or so how to differentiate between their emotions and somebody else's so they don't end up in a straitjacket.
What about age? Does that matter?
No. Well, it doesn't matter. The older one gets it. It really doesn't matter. But young people cannot be taught regular protocols earlier than about 9 or 10 years old. I have children's protocols. They're very effective. I've used them, tested them on my own children. That was fun. When they were fifth graders, and I tested them in Japan en masse, and they're very, very effective and fun. But otherwise, age, no, because a child doesn't have the lexicon of thesaurus. They have no problem locking onto a pattern of information that's connected with a remote viewing target, but they have a great deal of difficulty with even some of the basic descriptors. Even sensory impressions are lacking. A child, if they're given a target of, let's say, a man who just lost a loved one, a wife, for instance, the child may say, okay, there's a person here, he's a man, and he feels really bad, and he's crying. Okay, whereas an adult like you or I may say, there's a man here, he's experiencing grief and loss. There are there are elements of pathos and bathos or whatever associated with that, depending on how eclectic one might be or well-read, you have at your disposal those word ideas that are connected with the patterns of information you're pulling down.
Is it possible that with remote viewing, let's say in that particular case, can you remote view the funeral parlor and see the you know, a victim and know something happened to them like that?
Let's see if I follow you. You're talking about an event that already occurred?
Yeah.
Of course. Yeah, you just look at that person now, John Doe, and you qualify that with now or present time. Osama bin Laden, present time, that kind of thing.
Okay. What would you tell people that they can use remote viewing for? You know, if they're not in the corporate world, they're not in the military, what do you need it for?
For self-exploration is a big one. But if you're not in the self-exploration, practical things for, you know, what's the best investment, your optimum short-term, long-term investment in terms of sanctuaries, you know, where is the optimum earth location for you to avoid the kill shot sequence and things like that. Any number of things. Or if you want to look at the esoteric stuff, you can. Or you can look at, let's say, China's most secret a present offensive weapon system, or the U.S. is mostly. You can look at HAARP, what HAARP really is, those kinds of things.
Okay, that's pretty fascinating work. And for people who want more information on what you do and where they can find it, what do you recommend? You've got the killshot.com, you've got learnrv.com. Is that good enough?
And that's the killshot.com has nothing to do with learning. It's a warning thing, and it's a summary of what I found and what my team has found vis-a-vis the killshot. But learnrv.com has all the tools at your disposal. I teach there almost every day. My pros are there every day and every night, and that's all free. All the advanced training is free. They exchange projects there. They look at really sexy stuff, you know, like flashes off the coast of California. What was that? That kind of thing. So it's fun. It's exciting, and it's fun as well as a learning experience at learnrv.com.
And the kill shot still right around the corner, isn't it?
Just watch the sun. I think your listeners, if they're on the web, they should look at that coronal mass ejection three days ago now, and they'll get an inkling of what we're in for.
Ed, have you remote viewed a specific date, and that would be December 21st, 2012?
We can't use alphanumerics in our work, George. We cannot do that. We can't use them to target, and we can't download them. If, for instance, let's say, when I say alphanumerics, let's say you are a Chinese military officer, intelligence officer, and you have a top secret document in your safe in Peking about U.S. Missile systems or something like that.
Okay.
We can read that, loosely speaking, as remote viewers. We can target that document possessed by somebody, and we can download all the ideas associated with it, what's in the document, in terms of descriptive information. But we can't go to a certain page number, and we can't read, even though I speak and read Chinese, I can't do that because of this alphanumeric problem that we have. Only these patterns, these global patterns, can we download.
All right, stay with us. We're going to take phone calls next with Dr. Doom, Ed Dames on Coast to Coast AM. We'll be right back.